Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. I'm going to start the program today by taking a look at a book about the medical profession as seen through the eyes of doctors and as written by Steve Bozalacki, who was with me in the studio. Steve's from Madison, former medical journalist for Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm sure you've heard his voice in the past. He's former public relations director for the Wisconsin Medical Society, and he's the author of the book that I'm reading right now. I haven't had a chance to read it all. It's over 500 pages. Great book. It's called White Coat Wisdom. It's published by Apollo's Voice, and I'm really pleased to have him with us today to talk about the book, talk about the medical profession and the doctors that he had a chance to visit with. And, you know, he's been doing this for a long, long time. And certainly you may have some questions as we move along today about doctors or, you know, what he's learned about them as through his years, or maybe about the book. Maybe you want to know how to get a copy of it. We'll certainly talk about that. And certainly join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Steve Bozalacki, welcome.
Well, thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Really, it's a pleasure to have you with us today, and I really am enjoying this book. And I'm even though I didn't finish it now, I fully intend to finish it and probably within the next week or so, because it's really fascinating learning about the lives of these doctors. You've had a great career. It must be fun to have worked with so many wonderful people.
It's been a real privilege, and the irony is it all started right here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, right in this studio, I did my first broadcast about 25 years ago. I used to work weekends here, and then I learned to do interviews and, you know, get information from people. And right in the cubbyhole behind us here at Wisconsin Public Radio, I used to interview physicians when I was the medical reporter, and I really like talking to those guys and gals. Yeah. They're very fascinating people. They're articulate, knowledgeable, and they have great stories. And I just thought, you know, these people, there's got to be a story behind them, and yeah, I'd love to, like, to capture it. So I thought about it for a long time before I actually did this, and now finally, 3.5 years after I started, we have a book.
and tell our listeners how did you approach this book? What did you have in mind, and how did you go about doing it?
Well, Larry, as you know, as an interviewer, you're going to get the best information, the most honest information from people who know and trust you. Mm-hmm. Well, I've interviewed people through the years, and I got to know a lot of doctors, but I got to know them really well when I started working for the Wisconsin Medical Society. When you're a reporter, you're sort of arm's length. You don't want to get too close. You have to maintain your neutrality and be objective, right, and all that. But when you're working as a staff person at a statewide organization representing physicians, you can kind of let your hair down. You get to know people, go out to dinner with them, have a beer. And they became my friends, and they trusted me. So I started thinking about, well, who would be an interesting person to have in this book? You know, enjoys talking, expresses him or herself well, and has a point of view that would be worthwhile of discussing. I sort of just assembled this list, and then I started asking people who would be willing to do it, and almost everybody said yes. So I tried to have women and men, different age ranges, young and old, different areas of Wisconsin. Everybody is Wisconsin-based, but physicians tend to come from everywhere, so
sure.
I really think this is a national book. It could be well received anywhere.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because most of us, you know, I've had the same doctor now for a long time, and I have had long visits with him, but I don't really know very much about his personal life or how he got where he, you know, where he is today and that sort of thing. That's why this is so fascinating.
Well, I think you put your finger on it, and that really was why I wanted to do this. Here, I've sort of had the privilege of getting to know these people, and I really appreciate who they are and what they've become. But most people don't have that opportunity. They go to a doctor appointment, and, you know, there's so many people in line. The doctor has to take care of, you know, a particular problem, and they're sort of out the door, and it's on to the next one. And I think people will appreciate getting a feel for, well, what has my doctor been through? What does it take to be a doctor? What do they see? The life and death decisions. You know, you and I, if we make a mistake in our jobs, no one's going to die because of it.
No.
But what these people are in, not all of them, but a lot of them have jobs where they're surgeons. And, I mean, you make a mistake and somebody really could die. I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of responsibility. And they talk about that, how they approach that, how you gain the confidence to take a scalpel and cut somebody open and replace a liver. I mean, it seems incredible, but they learn how to do it, and they take you through it in the book, how they learned.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And you kind of, you've sectioned the book out, and you start with, I think, sort of the first stages. Talk about how you've set that up.
Sure. The first chapter involves learning to be a doctor, and Dr. Anderson Bauer, a brand new doctor.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, just graduated in 2007, and I wanted to get a feel for, well, what's medical school like today? He had just completed it, or was nearly complete when we talked, and he gives a fascinating look at current medical education and talks about, well, what was it like to learn about the brain? And he describes actually, you know, cutting the skull open and taking the brain out. I mean, I always thought journalists were curious, but doctors are really curious. So the first part of the book has to do with the training. So we go from Anderson after he talks about, you know, the arduous road that you take through medical school, all the studying, all the information you're cramming into your head, and then to Sandra Osborne, who's a pediatrician from Madison. She retired recently, though she hates that word, and she went back to medical school as a mentor. I mean, to talk about passion for what you do. I mean, she practiced for 30 years and then re-enrolled, went to classes for 4 years, and then served as a mentor. So I had her sort of explain, well, what's it like now compared to what you experienced? And what she said is these kids are just off the charts smart, and they have these experiences that they didn't have back then, and they have to learn so much more today because there is more. You know, medicine has just evolved so much. So that's how the first part of it opens with, you know, the state of medical education and training, and then it sort of evolves into other areas like end-of-life care and all kinds of different areas.
It's really interesting, and I've got to give people a chance to join in with their questions. If you'd like to join in, maybe you have a question for Steve Bozalaki, who's the author of White Coat Wisdom, as we talk about the medical profession through the eyes of doctors. That's what he's done in his book. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Maybe you've got an experience to share with a doctor that you'd like to talk, and we can hear that as well. We certainly can. Well, we mentioned Andy Bauer, Dr. Andrew Bauer, but you have a lot of interesting. Every one of these stories is really, really interesting. Dr. Mike Fiore has been a guest on this program many times, and I owe him a lot, frankly, because I used to smoke 15 years ago or so, and we quit on air, or I quit on air, and went through the quit smoking program with him. And I've done some things with him since then, many things with him since then, but I've learned a lot about Mike Fiore in your book, in that chapter.
You know what's funny about this? The doctors in the book say their own children are going to learn things about them in the book because they don't tend to ask the kind of questions that I asked. Yeah. I really was curious about, you know, why they chose medicine, where they grew up, what their parents think about their decision. In Dr. Fiore's case, he had really been thinking about being a dentist. And here he is, this nationally known smoking cessation specialist. He is a big national expert. He has testified at government trials, that sort of thing. And so he tells his story about growing up in a poor neighborhood in Boston and how basically his family recognized that he was a pretty bright kid and they said, you know, we need a doctor in the family and you're it. Well, he went along with it.
And he became a doctor. Oh, it's a great story. I love that story. And we have some callers online. Again, I'll give you the number, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And one of the stories I haven't gotten to yet, but I was trying to figure out where it is in the book, but it's there's something under pure awe. He's memorized 9,000 books.
Oh, Savant Syndrome.
And can pull those page by page.
Yeah, what's the story? Kim Peek, who's a patient of Dr. Daryl Trefford. Larry, you may remember that movie that Dustin Hoffman was in about Savant Syndrome. I'm blanking on the title now.
Yeah. I know the movie.
Oh, I wish I
can't think of it.
Yeah, he was a medical consultant for this movie, Rain Man.
Rain Man.
Rain Man is the story of a savant. And mm-hmm. savants are basically people who are mentally challenged severely, but they have this one island of genius. And Kim Peek, the patient you mentioned, this guy has like a computer memory. He can read a book and memorize it completely. He has thousands of books memorized, and he can tell you what's on page 123 of White Coal Wisdom if you happen to read the book. It's amazing. So Dr. Trefford studies savants. He's a psychiatrist, and he talks about how he got involved in this. How did a doctor from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin become the international authority on savant syndrome? Unbelievable. He used to head up the Mendota Mental Health Institute as the director. And so he had some young patients, and one day he noticed there was a kid who was able to memorize the entire bus schedule of the city of Milwaukee. So if you said, 4:23 on Tuesday, he could say, oh, the bus is passing Wisconsin and State Street. He had this memorized, and that just really took the doctor by surprise, and he wanted to learn more about it. And he said there wasn't that much information about it. So he quickly got, boned up on all the information available. And then we have a savant in Wisconsin. His name is Leslie Lemke, and he's a musical savant. You can play some music for him, and he can play it back immediately. But you can't even have a conversation with him. His mentality is that limited. So if you say, hi, Leslie, how are you? He'll just say, hi, Leslie, how are you? He has this. I think they call it an echoing response. But if you play some music, he's like a concert pianist, and he plays all over the place. So Dr. Trefford talks about how he's learned information from these people and how maybe we can use our own brains better and tap this region that they're able to tap, but we aren't.
Yeah, that's good. I can't wait to read that chapter. It sounds really, really, really interesting. Steve is online, and I'm not sure where Steve's from, but let's go to Steve. Hi.
Hi, I'm from the Wisconsin Rapids area.
Oh, okay.
And I had a question for the gentleman, and it was I wanted to praise our doctors and our healthcare systems for what they do for us. They do a good job. But my question was, is in his interviewing process, if he ever ran into any of these doctors that have farmed themselves out to insurance companies or workers' compensation type programs that have pretty much been told or programmed to deny people's claims? And if so, what his response would be and what other doctors think of these type of doctors that do this stuff?
Oh, all right. What do you, Steve Bozlocki?
The medical profession has changed tremendously over the years. There used to be, single practice doctors, and now it's all going to the larger practice. They just can't make it anymore. I have not interviewed anyone like that. And to be honest with you, out of all the doctors I know, I don't know anyone who is denying care because they're being forced to. I just personally haven't heard of that. I know it happens, but not in my circle anyway. So no, I did not delve into that at all.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Steve. Ron in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Well, you have a very nice Pollyanna attitude toward doctors. I wonder if there's anything in your book about the difficulty that we as consumers have in trying to find out a doctor's record in terms of deaths or catastrophic events from some of their operations or procedures. Very difficult to find that. I think there's a concerted effort to hide not only the hospital's record of deaths, but a doctor's even more difficult to find out about. Do you address that in your book?
Again, that's not what the book is about, though. They talk about striving to care for people in the best way that they can, and that comes through really clearly. Quality of care issues come up all the time, and the doctors themselves are extremely critical about the healthcare system. I can give you an example. The ERs in this country, they are taking people who really shouldn't be going to an ER, and it's costing all of us a fortune. People have colds, or they just don't want to make an appointment. They want to come in right away. And we have a doctor from Milwaukee, Dr. John Wickham, talks about how he was able to reform the ER in Milwaukee and save a lot of money. He was losing something like $9 million a year, and he was able to bring it to almost even by making some very basic changes. Like, when someone came in and they were complaining about a cold, he would say, have you seen your family doctor yet? And they said, oh, he's too busy. So he would get on the phone himself, call the family doctor, and the doctor said, well, they never called here. They can come over right now. He started doing that. Word got out, and he stopped seeing these kind of cases where, you know, people were using the ER inappropriately. So the book is not Pollyanna at all. It deals with a lot of serious issues, specifically to what you're suggesting about how hard it is to see a doctor. You can get information from the Medical Examining Board, the Department of Regulation and Licensing. It's out there. You can find it.
And just the whole issue of death comes up. And I know several of the doctors in the book talk about that whole issue of, you know, they've got life and death in their hands all the time. And I think there were some really interesting stories in there about how they, you know, you try to be perfect, and even sometimes when you're perfect in what you do, somebody dies.
Well, that's the struggle, because doctors have to fight taking these things personally when, you know, sometimes there really isn't a whole lot that the medical profession can do. And that's what I really liked about the personalities in the book. They tended to recognize their limitations, that, you know, we put doctors on a pedestal, but they realize that there may be a higher power involved. And many of them go as far as to say that. Dr. John Reich, for instance, from the Milwaukee area, he's a surgeon, and he told me that he's had so many cases where a patient has recovered, not died, and he said it had nothing to do with me. I don't know how that person ever made it, but they did. And so they are often surprised themselves, but they go to great lengths to get it right, and a lot of them lose sleep over this because there's a lot of responsibility on their shoulders, and they know it.
Steve Bozulaki, our guest today, author of the book White Coat Wisdom. It's a story about the medical profession through the eyes of the many doctors, or many of the doctors, I shouldn't say not all, because Steve knows a lot of them, but many of the doctors that he's come to know over his 25 years as a medical journalist and working in the medical industry. If you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Steve Bozulaki, author of White Coat Wisdom. Pleased to have him with us. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And I think Michelle is up next. Let's go to Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Thank you for calling.
Hi. As the wife of a physician, he's a family physician, I just wanted to kind of address what the one guy said about covering up.
Yeah.
And also the Medicare and lack of payments as far as that goes. The cost of becoming a doctor nowadays is outrageous. We're still paying. He's been out of medical school for 6 years now. We're still paying on medical school loans. So not only is that a lot, but to do it, he works really hard. We live in a small town, and he has made the comment that, you know, getting reimbursed for Medicare or Medicaid is just, it's very hard, and they make it very hard for a doctor to, I mean, he still accepts it, of course, as a practice, but they don't reimburse, and these doctors who want to do the right thing and take care of the patients and all that, they certainly don't make it easy for them.
Yeah. Steve, a comment?
No, it's really true. And if you read this book, you'll get a sense for what doctors have to go through and what their lives are like. As she mentions, it's expensive just to go to medical school. It's over $200,000, and these people are paying that off for quite a while. I think people don't really get a feel for what doctors have been through, and that's why I wanted to write the book. It really gives people a sense of not only what it is to be an effective physician, but how to be a successful human being. That's what these people are about. They define success. They are the smart kid that you went to school with who always got A's, you know? I mean, and then they talk about how they balance their personal life with their professional life, you know, how to do right by your patients, but also, you know, care about your kids and be there for them. And it can be a real challenge.
Yeah, it can be. Michelle, you're doing okay, though?
Yeah. We hang in there. It's a hard life being the wife of a family physician, but I mean, it's he loves what he does. He likes being able to take care of the whole family from babies, you know, up till when they grow up. You know, commenting on the straight A student, he worked hard. He went to just a plain old university, and he ended up graduating top of his class. And you know, it's just a matter of if you want to do it, also. And just staying on top of the literature and reading the journals all the time, and staying on top of your game.
Yep, doesn't stop when you finally pass that and become a doctor. There's still a lot of education that keeps going.
Exactly, and they're lifelong learners, Larry. And that's what's interesting. There are a couple docs in the book who are in their mid-80s, and they're still practicing. And you have to really keep up on what's going on to continue to practice. They've been practicing for over 50 years in Monroe, Dr. John and Mary France. Just amazing. But they love what they do.
Michelle, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let's take some more calls. Nancy in Grafton, we'll go to you next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. About 26 years ago or so, our family doctor was retiring, and he said, "Well, you know, there's this new young doctor, and I think you'd like him." And so I was Dr. Doug McManus's second patient. And a long time ago, I said to him, I said, "Well, you know what? I was just wondering if, you know, I thought maybe the first patient he had maybe was older than I was and maybe wasn't around anymore. So I said, I was just wondering, am I your number one patient?" And he puts his arms around my shoulder and he says, "Nancy, you've always been my number one patient." And that's the kind of a doctor he is. He is just like one of your family. And when his own father was quite ill, and he was a physician, he asked if I would help his mom take care of his father, and now his mom needs a little bit of help. And so I come up, and it's just such a blessing to have somebody who really cares about you, your family, and I just can't say enough about a good doctor like that. And I also had, I used to help a lady who was quite elderly and who had severe dementia, and she was going to an oncologist here in Ozaukee County, and I would be with her to see the oncologist, and she would get some medication for her cancer. And this doctor was so kind to her, and he would talk to her like she really knew what the heck was going on, and he would take time with her. And when you were with him, this was the only patient he ever had. And I just think Dr. Torgelson over at St. Mary's Hospital here in Ozaukee County is a marvelous doctor because he cares. I mean, the compassion he had for this elderly lady who has since now passed away, but it was just beautiful to see. Yeah. So there are so many good fellows out there, and God bless them all because they surely deserve our praise and our prayers.
And that's why they love this profession. Exactly what she described. The doctors that I've talked to over the years and in this book talk about this patient-doctor relationship, and that's what they get jazzed about, that they get to know these families, entire families, if they're a family doctor, and some of the one OB has delivered the kids for, you know, multiple generations, and, you know, they can count their babies in the thousands. They have these tight relationships, and they say, you know, there's no reward greater than that, than, you know, having these really tight relationships with patients.
Nancy, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And Jeff in La Crosse, I believe it's your turn. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. You're welcome. Steve, I didn't think I'd be talking to you again so soon, but I was sitting in the bar last night and talking with one of our bartenders, and the likelihood of, of a Democratic president coming up, and then the possibility of universal health care. And so I made a bet that that we would have that within the next 4 years of the inauguration. I was wondering if you might have some sort of sense of your experiences of writing the book and just in general of what you think about that.
Yeah, or what the doctors think about it, who you talk to.
Well, I think the doctors agree that the system needs to be fixed. I haven't heard a single doctor ever who said, this works just great and everybody's getting all the care that they need. It's a mess. It's a hodgepodge. The biggest problem politically with changing the healthcare system is that most of us, probably 75 or 80% of us, have good insurance, and we're completely happy. The 20% that don't, It's very difficult. So to change the system, those of us who have good health care now are going to have to pay more so everybody has better health care. Hopefully, personally, I hope we move in that direction because it's crazy the way we do things now. There's too much bureaucracy. It costs way too much money. People who don't have a family doctor end up having illnesses that are treated at a stage where it's too late or too advanced and more expensive. What point is there
What's
in that?
What's the point to that?
No.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you. Thanks for calling. Malika in Madison, I think, is next. Malika, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm so happy to have a chance to be on the show. My name is Malika, and I'm actually in pharmaceutical sales. And one of the things I absolutely love about my job is that I have the opportunity to get to know so many physicians all over Wisconsin that come from so many different backgrounds. And I feel like I get to have those conversations that you've had, you know, had in your book every single day. And I know we hear a lot of really negative things about the industry and pharmaceutical sales in general, but, you know, I believe I'm a good rep and I represent the risks and the benefits of my drugs fairly. And I just wanted to let you know that, you know, and let everyone know that that's one of the things that I really love about this job. And it's one of the reasons that I know me and a lot of my colleagues really enjoy doing it is we get a chance to meet with these remarkable, brilliant doctors every day and hear their stories. And I was wondering if you could comment on whether or not any of the physicians had mentioned the complex relationship that the pharmaceutical, you know, industry has with them and, you know, how their feelings are about it.
Well, not in the book, but I've talked to plenty of docs about this. And, you know, they don't have this negative perception of the reps. They've always told me that they appreciate the information because people like you really do have information about drugs that can help their patients, and they want to be updated on that. So there is controversy with respect to the gifts, and that I think that has changed a lot where you can't give a doctor a trip to Hawaii to, you know, speak at your conference or whatever. So I think that has changed, and I think the profession recognizes it's not appropriate to take expensive gifts.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Malika, for calling. Appreciate your call. And, boy, some more callers online. John in Darlington, I think, is next. John, hi to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
And my son is a dermatologist up in Rhinelander.
Yeah.
He's been there for 25 years. He's in private practice. And talk about a busy guy.
Yeah.
Wow, because he does a lot of skin cancer surgery. That's sort of his specialty, and I was just wondering if you have a kind of a statistic on how many doctors are actually in private practice, like my son in Wisconsin, versus doctors that work in clinics and other group settings.
Well, it's certainly the majority that are in group settings. I think your son is a dying breed. There are very few that can make it anymore.
Seems like he's dying, though. It's like
no,
that overly busy.
Right. I think the economics of medicine may vary a little bit too in northern Wisconsin compared to where there's a lot more competition in the larger cities in southern Wisconsin and central Wisconsin.
So it's the private practice is difficult because of.
Well, buyers want to work with groups where they can get big discounts, and it's just more difficult for a single physician to offer everything that, you know, a group plan would need. So it just doesn't work out. They have to join these groups. They're forced to.
So it's a little bit of a dying breed. Not necessarily your son here, John, but it, unfortunately, or however you want to look at it, it's not going that direction.
Right.
Mark in Colfax, we'll give you a chance. Mark, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if your book talks about foreign doctors. We have so many more foreign doctors here. For example, my primary care physician's from Peru, and I chose him from one of the large clinic groups, Marshfield, because I went online, and when I was looking for a new doctor under interests, everybody's listing like sailboating or fishing and all this, and he listed diabetes, and I'm diabetic.
Oh.
So I picked him, but I'm wondering if you talk any about the paths that some of our foreign doctors have taken.
I do. There's a whole section on it. I call it world class. The reason I wanted to focus on doctors from other countries, you think about what it takes to be a physician. it's a tremendously demanding job. You have to be smart and you have to be dedicated to this. Now take that and go to a foreign country and do it in another language. I mean, just imagine. So I focused on a couple docs. One, the one doctor from Turkey, Dr. Munji Kalayalu, who's a transplant surgeon. He started out life wanting to be an architect and he flunked out of architecture school. What am I going to do now? Ends up being a world-class transplant surgeon right here at the University of Wisconsin. He has since moved back to Turkey. He retired and is still doing transplants in Turkey. But anyway, he tells his story about what it was like to grow up in Turkey and how he got interested because he saw so many of the young kids with liver disease. Apparently, it's even more common there than here. And he learned how to do these transplants from a mentor. There's another doctor who's a former president of the Wisconsin Medical Society, and he's from Pakistan, Dr. Ayaz Samadani. And he talks about how he didn't even have to work. He grew up in a very wealthy family. His dad was a landowner. And he just thought it was a noble profession, and the reason he got into it because he was volunteering at what he called an eye camp, where doctors from other areas were coming in to provide free surgery, cataract surgery for poor people, and he was assisting them, and he thought that was so noble that these doctors were doing that, so he chose the profession himself. And where does he go? Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. A Muslim living in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. He's been there for 35 years, has made an entire life here. He originally only planned to come for what he called a rescue mission because they really needed a doctor there, and he never left. So they have a very wonderful story to tell.
They surely do. And the doctor that you mentioned who does the liver transplants,
Kalailu,
quite a story. You asked him about his first one, and what a story that he told about flying to Canada and the tornadoes and
right.
Everything else.
And that was at the time when they couldn't preserve the organs as well as they can. They have a preservation fluid that was invented here at UW Hospital that gives you more time to actually do the procedure. Back then, they had to have that new liver in the patient within something like 24 hours. So he's on a Learjet. He gets caught in the tornado. He has to be up for like 60 hours straight. It really sounded incredible. But he tells it so wonderfully and has no regrets about doing this and loves every minute of it.
And that patient survived, and it was a very successful surgery, too.
Exactly.
Oh, man. It's quite a story in and of itself. Mac and Clover, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mac.
Hi there. It sounds like a fascinating book. I'm a physician in central Wisconsin, and there are so many points to make, I won't even get to all of them. But one thing about quality assurance, patients can access something called the National Practitioners Data Bank, which records lawsuits and that sort of thing, just in terms of what it sounds like the gist of this book is, I agree that physicians are, in a sense, a separate breed by virtue of their desire to practice medicine, and then also the training and then the experience that comes along with that. I think among physicians, there are also separations, and I notice that the author frequently cites surgeons, and I would say surgeons are clearly a separate breed because of the degree of responsibility, even among physicians, and I think most physicians would acknowledge that.
They vary tremendously by specialty, and yeah,
absolutely.
I had fun with the surgeons. I really did. They're very glib, and they're so self-confident. One surgeon told me a story about how he performed his own vasectomy. And I thought to myself, why in the world did you perform your own vasectomy? But it was illegal back then in Wisconsin.
Because he can.
Yeah. Well, he got one of his friends, and he did both of them. But the other doctor, one was a primary care doctor, made sure he was okay while he was doing himself. Oh, it's a crazy story. But they do things like this, and you just kind of shake your head. But they have this passion, and it's not just surgeons. It's just it depends on where they're from and what their specialty is. I think doctors will learn a lot if they read the book, just because the experiences are so different, where they grew up.
I can't wait to get it.
Oh, thanks.
I'm an interventional radiologist, so I have a little bit of that bent of doing things that are invasive to the patient, and it it does produce a perspective of respect for, well, sort of global respect. And I could go on and on and on. It sounds like a fascinating book, and I can't wait to pick it up.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. And speaking of that, we should talk. Boy, I'm on your website. You got a great website this book. I love it with podcasts, and you've got a lot about, of course, the other services you provide. But
there's audio on there. You can go to each chapter and get a chapter summary and actually hear from the doctor. I recorded each of these interviews, so that'll be the next thing, Larry, maybe a CD. But it gives you a snippet of that particular doctor. There's excerpts on there. You can buy the book on the website, whitecoatwisdom.com. You can get it at bookstores, Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble. Go to your local bookstore. They can order it. And go to the website, by the way, is all one word here, whitecoatwisdom.com. Take a quick look at there. You can order it right off the website if you want. Or go to your bookstore. We mentioned Barnes & Noble. And you've got some presentations coming up. We should mention those, too.
Yes,
Steve.
Thanks. In La Crosse on February 15th, we'll be at the Barnes & Noble there with one of the doctors. Dr. Dennis Kostakis is going to sign books. He's a neonatologist. Fascinating man. In Madison on March 4th at Barnes & Noble's in Westtown. We'll be there from 7 to 9, and Dr. Sandra Osborne is going to join me for that. She's featured in the book. So we're going to have some fun with this. We're going to take it around the state.
It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, and the book is really an interesting, fascinating read about the lives of these people. We didn't get into – there's so many that I wanted to ask you about, but I'll tell you what, maybe we can do that another time. And the book's sales are going great.
Yeah, it's only been out a week ago Monday, and it's over 500 sold, so I'm really pleased about
that. Yeah, that's pretty good for a week or less than a week. Well, the book is called White Coat Wisdom. The author is Steve Bozalaki. And go to the website, whitecoatwisdom.com, or I tell you what, stop in on February 15th if you're in La Crosse, Barnes & Noble, and the doctor you're speaking with in February is from that area?
Yes, he's at Franciscan Skemp Healthcare. He saves these babies, Dr. Kostakis, a pound and a half, 2 pounds. I mean, just unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And so he talks about, you know, how we can prevent premature babies in society and, you know, how expensive it is. And there are ways that we can prevent it. And he chats about that.
Well, and then on March 4th, Barnes & Noble, that's at 7 o'clock, 7 to 9 p.m. you'll be there.
That's right.
Again with another doctor.
Yes, and we're going to have a sort of an education focus for that. So some of the money is going to go toward education charities, and because these people are lifelong learners, and they're totally into education, and they talk about how we can, you know, better educate people and how we can encourage people to achieve more.
And one final note, part of the profits from this book you are donating as well. And where is that money going?
Well, the Wisconsin Medical Society Foundation, in honor of Dr. Ken Visti's life. Dr. Visti is just one of the most wonderful people I've ever known. He passed away a few years ago. And he was a doctor who helped me so frequently when I was a reporter right here at Wisconsin Public Radio. He was a policy expert, and he was just such an articulate, fascinating man. And then when I got to know him, and when I moved to the medical society, he was even a more prominent influence on my life. And I just want to be able to encourage more doctors to follow in Dr. Visti's footsteps. So money's going to go to that fund, and it'll provide scholarships for young people.
Well, it's really a real pleasure to have you on, Steve. Thank you so much, and good luck with the book. Well, sounds like it's going to go very, very well.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's been a lot of fun.
A real pleasure. Steve Bozalaki is author of White Coat Wisdom. Go to your local bookstore, Barnes, and they can order it. Barnes & Noble has it in stock. University Bookstore in Madison has it on stock, but you'll find it. And otherwise, go online to WhiteCoatWisdom.com, and you can order it right off of Steve's website. Thanks very much. And, you know, talking about doctors, Dr. Dick Niles is a practicing dermatologist in Oconomowoc and Watertown. He's been with us a number of times, and he's back coming up next here to talk about dermatology and skin cancer prevention. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.